That was as good a NCAA tournament round of 16 that I can remember. And I'm old, so I don't remember very well, but it seems like it was really damn good.
Well, you're not as old as I am. I really don't remember well, but, no, the opener, it was the opener on TBS, Michigan State, K-State, and then the nightcap on CBS, Gonzaga, UCLA. Those were two all-timers, right, Brad?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think the tournament in general this year, maybe it's because there's not outside. Alabama is really, really good, but there's not just a – well, for one thing, the Blue Bloods, a lot of them got knocked out relatively early, and there's not a clear-cut favorite in the field that at least that's not head and shoulders above everybody. And I think it's been as good a tournament as I can ever remember in general, and some of these individual games are unbelievable.
Okay, let's start with the first game of the night that came on at 5:30 on TBS. Michigan State, K-State, and, man, so many storylines in this one. Marquise Noel, obviously, at the top of the list with his NCAA record 19 assists. But, Marcus, you also had the drama of his injury early in the second half where he had to be helped off the court and have his ankle taped up. And you know, K-State had like a 9-point lead, whatever, and then all of a sudden Michigan State takes the lead with him sidelined. He comes back. He didn't miss that many minutes, but all of a sudden he comes back in and banks in a 3-pointer to beat the shot clock and tie the game at 55, and from there it was an all-timer, right, Mark?
K-State looked like the daggum Globetrotters last night. I mean, that was they were doing everything, banking threes, having plays that were – crazy that, you know, looking at the bench and throwing an alley-oop with the signal from the coach. But Marquise Noel is having one of the great NCAA tournaments of all time. I mean, I don't know about how much further Kansas State's going to go. I would think that they're going to be pretty decent-sized favorite over Florida Atlantic, but some of his numbers are off the charts crazy. I thought, man, can we – for all the good that they've done, and as great as they are, can we get rid of the grumpy old men in the NCAA basketball tournament, for God's sakes? I mean, Florida Atlantic coach is great. Seems to have a really good, you know, personality. But Tom Izzo last night saying that it was a couple lucky shots and his team didn't play good and all that. What the hell is he talking about?
Well,
that's the way
it works.
How about
Jerome Tang? I mean, is this guy a breath of fresh air? And he's 56 years old.
The post-game interview, the post-game interview with he and Noel was fantastic. It was just a moment of joy. It really was great, and I agree with you to a large degree, Mark. That some of these guys, it's the thing about Patino getting another job is like there's a lot of these recycled guys that I don't know. I think that the spirit of the game has kind of passed them by.
Hey, Marcus, let me give it up to you right now. Matt did earlier on yesterday. You said, hey, this is not the same Michigan State team that can lock you down defensively. This is going to be a high-scoring game. It might have even been a little higher scoring even than you thought, Marcus. I don't know. But, I mean, 98-93, I know it went overtime. But the point is both of those teams, I mean, Michigan State shoots 49%, 52% from three. K-State almost 56%. With almost 40% from three, both teams were making shots right and left, and Noel was dishing. But here's the thing on K-State, though. And listen, I've said all year long, Marquise Noel is my favorite player to watch, even long before the tournament. But now he can shoot you into games, and he can shoot you out of games. And even in this game, Marcus, he took a couple of questionable threes, one down the stretch of regulation, another one in overtime, whatever. But where he, you know, he'll just pull up from 30, and you can almost see it coming and go, no, Marquise, not right now. He does take some hero shots, but he more than makes up for it, right?
He was a hero last night. 20 points and 19 rebounds, and he's created 62% of his team's offense. I mean, I don't know what they're doing if he's not playing the way that he's playing. But I think at his size, it's unbelievable.
5'8". Yeah, 5'8". Now, Marcus, what do you think about him, his NBA potential? What do you think?
I don't see it. I mean, how many 5'8 guards are there in the NBA? I mean, in the last 20 years, there's a handful. I just don't know. I think that's just a really tough ask. At the most, you guys, at the most, he could be kind of a role player that bounces around from team to team, you know.
You see the tweet that Kevin Durant sent to him last night about controlling the basketball game or whatever.
It's pretty
cool. I don't have it in front of him. Yeah, that is pretty cool. But only 5'8". It's what makes it such a great story. He's from Harlem. Grows up on the streets of Harlem, and now he's playing in the Garden, putting on a show like that, right?
Yeah, he's fantastic, and I'm glad you asked Mark that question because I've been wondering this thing. Is there a place for him on a team, and where does he go from here? They used to run that commercial. You don't see it as much anymore about how I think the line was there are so many college athletes and most of them are going to go professional in something else besides the sport that they play. I wonder about a guy like him. Where does he go? Where does his life go from here? Because he's always – or at least for a long, long time, going to be a legend in March Madness. He's had a tournament that we're going to remember for a long time, but is he able to go to the next level? And I just have a hard time imagining that he's going to be competitive at the NBA level, unless it's, like Mark said, in some kind of a role-playing situation.
Well, like I said, he did miss that deep three at the end of regulation. Another one, in overtime, only went 7 for 18, 2 for 6 from 3. But 20 points, 19 assists. He also had 5 steals, including a steal at the very end of the game last night where he caps it off with a layup. But this was a tremendous, tremendous game where you had, 16 lead changes, 14 ties. Neither team ever led by double figures in this game. And in the second half, neither team led by more than 7 points. In the final 15 minutes of regulation, neither team led by more than 7 points. It was just great, great stuff. And we got to say, for Michigan State, they had a couple of really good performances too. One from Hoggard, who went for 25 and 6, but very efficient, 7 out of 14, 10 for 11 at the line. And then Tyson Walker also comes up with some big shots, 4 out of 7 from 3. He had 16 points. I mean, there were just and then, Marcus, Keontae Johnson. It's almost we're talking so much about Noel that I think on K-State we do need to remember that they had a lot of other guys that really contributed. Keontae Johnson, obviously, he led them in scoring with 22 points. But I'm just saying – that Masood, he had a couple of more big shots last night. One long three, the shot from the baseline that Ghassan gave him 17 minutes off the bench where he made all 5 of his shots. Tomlin, Carter goes 5 for 6. He made a couple of threes. Sills fouled out. They're getting contributions up and down the roster there, Marcus, right?
Well, I think they are getting some contributions up and down the roster. I think Keontae Johnson is a he was considered to be a big-time NBA prospect before he had his incident at Florida during COVID, and I think he still probably can play in the NBA. He's pretty good. Other than that, I think Masuda is the guy that can shoot from the outside, a little bit of a marksman, but I think K-State's kind of making, most of their hay off of just the creative ability of Noel, and he's playing good right now. That when he played bad this season, Kansas State wasn't any good. When he played really good, they were great. So I think that's the whole key for Kansas State.
And that's what I was going to point out too, is Craig, as you're going through those stats, you think about how many of those points that you rattled off from all those different players, including Keontae Johnson, that Noel was involved in, that he was the spark plug that gave them the ability to get that score. And so Mark's absolutely right. They live and die with how he performs, and hopefully he's hot at the right time. I mean, it looks like they're set up to continue on in the tournament because they're going to wind up playing Florida Atlantic instead of somebody else that they might have otherwise wound up playing. But as we're going to talk about in a minute, Florida Atlantic continues to prove that they deserve to be where they are.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Brad. No, I know he's creating it for them. I'm just saying at least they're finishing,
No, you got to have guys that can finish it. You're right about that.
I mean, you got to,
sure.
And even Noel said after the game, they're making the shots and that he is creating, but it's like we talked about in the Kentucky game. Remember when Kentucky kept sending the double teams, and he would just dribble around the double team and then, have guys wide open for layups or threes. I mean, the guy is just fantastic to watch. But what he did after spraining his ankle, I'm thinking, oh, there's too much time left. They're dead in the water now without him. And he's gone for a couple of minutes, comes out. He ends up playing, what, 43 out of the 45 minutes. And Johnson played all 45 minutes. It was great stuff in that game last night. Okay, let's talk. Well, let's get to the other great game last night, and that was the nightcap, obviously, where Strother had the late three-pointer for Gonzaga to beat UCLA. But, Mark, you talked about a game with swings. This was crazy.
No, it was crazy. You know, in the first half, UCLA, I think they talked about it a lot in the broadcast last night, is that there's a good possibility they just kind of ran out of gas. You know, I mean, really, they just didn't have any depth. They didn't have any inside play. I thought that was a big reason that Timmy had the kind of game that he had, and he's good, and it's not taken away from him. But UCLA didn't have much inside resistance, and you've been bringing that up throughout the entire tournament with the injuries that they've had there inside. And I think they got away from Jaime Jaquez. I you know, he had some foul trouble. I thought that Mick Cronin was doing a great job coaching situationally at the end of the game. I didn't think Mark Few was doing a great job coaching situationally at the end of the game to let that lead kind of go away with a couple of bad free throw shooters on the floor. UCLA was good. It was a great comeback. Again, it was great theater throughout the entire game for what happened. But UCLA just didn't have enough, I think.
Well, they hit that icy patch in the second half, and nothing was going in for anybody.
11-minute drought.
They just never recovered from it. Yeah, they almost did, but they never quite could. And, I mean, I knew that game was going to be a barn burner. I had no idea it was going to be as good as it turned out to be. I mean, that was an immediate classic. That game is one for the ages.
And to Mark's point on Timmy, real quick, Marcus, Timmy, 36 points. It was his 10th NCAA tournament game with at least 20 points. That is a new record. 10 games with at least 20 points in the tournament?
One of the weird things about the UCLA scoring drought was they went 11 minutes. You only had 11 missed field goals in those 11 minutes, and that shows to me that the rebounding dominance of Gonzaga in the game was huge. So UCLA, not only were they not scoring, they were only getting one shot per possession. And Gonzaga was able to kind of grind it away to come back and get into the game. But, man, 11 shots in 11 minutes? I mean, if you extrapolate that through of the game, it'd be 40 field goal attempts. I mean, that's incredibly low.
Some of those were good looks that they just couldn't get full. Gonzaga out-rebounded them 48-24 in that game. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I'm showing 50-26.
Oh, do I have the wrong number? Okay.
Like double. Well, whatever it was, what you're saying – you're right. They about doubled them up in rebounds, whether it's 48-24 or 50-26. 16-7 on the offensive glass, they more than doubled them on the offensive glass with Watson and Timmy doing the damage inside. Each of them had five offensive rebounds. It's like Mark said, that bottom line is what did in UCLA, they just didn't have enough inside. And like Brad said, they went the 11-minute stretch without scoring a field goal. Well, you just can't do that. But and they go from 13 up to 10 down. The amazing thing, they're 10 down with 2:40 to go. They look dead in the water. They're still 7 down with 50-something seconds to go, guys, and came back and actually had the lead in the game.
Yeah, Gonzaga, Mark pointed this out this morning when we were talking on the CAD. Gonzaga, specifically Mark Few, almost gave that game away because there were some poor decisions made in the last few, I don't know, the last minute of that game, let's say, allowed UCLA to stick their foot in the door because Gonzaga should have been able to slam it closed, and they just didn't quite.
Timmy missed two fouls. Remember, I mean, Timmy goes from 36
to
13.
Those were feeble attempts at the rim on those foul shots.
He could have been remembered as the GOAT because, remember, they had the lead. When he misses two free throws, it sets up that three by Amari Bailey. Which puts UCLA into the lead, which set up the Strother shot. But what I'm saying is, if Strother doesn't make that shot, Timmy is the GOAT for missing those foul shots, right?
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I really like the play that Gonzaga called at the end of the game on that screen that they ran to get Strother an open shot is a long shot. But I think in today's game, long threes aren't terrible shots. Going inside for them was going to potentially create a foul situation and a problem of making pressure free throws, which Timmy looked like he didn't want any part of that in the final minute when they fouled him. So I think that it was a gutsy call, and it was two crazy threes at the end of the game. And for the third time in four meetings between those teams in the tournament, a game-winning shot's been made in the final 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's the unbelievable thing is it's the same, you know, Strother makes it this time, but you had, you know, the same two teams situation a couple of years ago where, you know, it's Gonzaga, you know, banking in the shot, you know, that puts them into the finals. And then we had the situation, like Matt said, ironically, it was exactly 17 years to the day, the 17-year anniversary, where Adam Morrison is just laying on the court crying, you know, because UCLA won the Sweet 16 game in Oakland, California, where UCLA scored the final 11 points of the game to knock Gonzaga out. And then you had Adam Morrison, they showed him last night on the radio, calling the game for Gonzaga with a lot shorter hair than he had 17 years ago. Just crazy, crazy stuff, huh?
Speaking of long hair, is it just me or do the UCLA players look like the Bad News Bears out there? Like the headbands and the
Campbell.
Shaggy hair.
Yeah. Jaime Jaquez. I thought Jaime Jaquez, though, had a heck of a game, though, guys. I mean, 29 and 11, three steals. He made some clutch buckets and three-point plays when they came back in the final 50 seconds and end up taking the lead. But then they didn't have enough, and so you got to give the Zags. Marcus, are you thinking maybe that this team has some magic, or is it about over for Gonzaga?
I think it's over for them. I was Blaine sent me the point spreads on these two games on Saturday, and they're both two. I get it with the Kansas State game. I don't get it with Gonzaga and UConn. UConn has one of the more dominant inside presences in the tournament. And they've played great basketball. They're doing everything right. I think they're playing at their best level. And at the beginning of the season, you know, they were undefeated in non-conference play. They beat Alabama by 17. I think that they're just really good. I do not think Gonzaga is going to be able to score in the paint.
I'll tell you this, though,
with Connecticut like that,
I feel like if you're going to see a team go up against that UConn inside presence, Gonzaga is the team I want to see do it. I don't want to see K-State play in that team. I want to see Gonzaga with Timmy and those guys down low because I do think they've got a better chance than either one of the other two teams on that side of the bracket would.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
UConn now one game away from the Final Four after they blow out Arkansas 88-65. Guys, Jim Calhoun had a great run at Arkansas, a lot of great teams. This UConn team playing like a team that is capable of winning their fifth national title. It would be their first one since 2014. But they've outscored their three opponents in this tournament by 62 points, Marcus. They are dominating people.
Congratulations to UConn. We didn't have to see Eric Musselman's nipples after last night's game. So that was the best victory whole evening. They're good. They're really good. I think they're as good a team as in the tournament. They got a good chance to win it as far as I'm concerned. They've got an elite outside scorer in Hawkins. They've got two guys with inside presence. They're assisting on all their baskets. Danny Early, this is a great job that he's done with his team. It's pretty amazing from where they were kind of in an abyss and, you know, where they – went back to the Big East and some of the things and situations that have been made, and they definitely have a legacy of doing well in the tournament. But that was they won all three of their games by 15 points. I mean, I'm really impressed with UConn.
Yeah, I don't see a weakness, Brad. I mean, they shoot 57%, 45% from three, and they locked down Arkansas on the defensive end.
Yeah, you got to give credit. I got to give credit to Mark here because he called this yesterday. As athletic as Arkansas is, They just couldn't keep up with UConn. And you're right. I mean, the way UConn is playing, I don't know. I mean, there are some teams. Alabama, when they get rolling, can play really well. Texas, at times, looks really good. That Texas-Houston game that we're hopefully building toward should be fantastic. But UConn, I mean, I don't know that there's anybody in the country that's better than them, or at least playing better than them right now, headed through the tournament.
And it was an Arkansas team trying to go to the Elite Eight for the third straight year. Still three Sweet 16 appearances for Arkansas. But this team just didn't shoot the ball well enough. I know they have some guys who are supposed to go high in the NBA draft, and Davis and Black and Council and Smith. I mean, they have some players on that team. But they were no match for UConn. So the Huskies now move on, and they're going to take on Gonzaga. And you're saying, Marcus, you like UConn in that one, huh?
I do like UConn. I like UConn in that one. I like them a lot, just based on the matchups. You know what I'm saying? Is that you know? And I heard you talking earlier today about Timmy playing in the NBA, and the NBA has just changed so much. And a player that like Timmy was so valuable in college basketball, because there's not a whole lot of guys like that anymore. I mean, the game has changed into athletic ability and, you know, potential to make three-point shots and ability to switch and guard all the different positions on the floor. And teams just don't go to the post position very much anymore. And so I just don't think Timmy is going to be athletic enough to score inside. And if that happens, it allows teams to guard Gonzaga a lot better on the three-point line. And I don't think UConn minds getting up and down the floor. I don't think they mind a high-paced game.
Not saying Timmy can't play in the NBA. You just don't think he's going to be a star. I didn't say he's going to be a star. I'm just saying there's a place for him in the NBA, in my opinion, for a guy that good.
I just don't think there is. I don't think there's
You don't
even
think
a place
he can even
him.
Play in the NBA, huh?
No, and I think this is one of the reasons why he's continued to come back to college, because even 2 years ago, he was still this good as a college basketball player. And you thought, well, maybe he'll go in the draft. But I think that his draft report has been pretty negative. I don't know that he'd get drafted. And it's not that his post skills aren't good. I think you're 100% right that his footwork is elite. I mean, that move that he made last night where he turned around and got right to the basket, he's really, really good at that. But I just don't think there's a lot of post-up opportunities in the NBA. And if they are, they're for guys that are massive, you know, like Valanciunas, or just NBA, as an undersized post. Think of all the athletes he's going to get switched onto, and think if he's strong enough to be able to score inside. I don't know.
There's a lot of that in college basketball, though. I mean, you look at most of the post players in college basketball, and they're much, much smaller than they are once they make that leap to the NBA level. And so I think what you're saying about Timmy, I don't know if it's accurate or not. I do think that the guy has a lot of athletic ability, and if he were to go a specialist route, I think there's a potential that he could play. But I do think you're right in that he's kind of a tweener. But as I've watched this tournament, I've found myself thinking about lots of these big guys and thinking, I don't know if that guy is big enough to be strong inside at the NBA level where they can at the collegiate level.
Mark might be right. Maybe if the NBA loved him that much, I mean, they would have snapped him up a long time before now. I got you on that, because I'm just going to be surprised if he doesn't make a roster, if he's not in the league somewhere. That's all I'm saying.
One guy that he could potentially emulate would be a former Gonzaga player in Olenek, who's a little taller, but you remember he was kind of an inside player at Gonzaga. But now, I mean, if Timmy can go out and hit
– if he could shoot the ball
24, 25-foot three-point shots all day, then there will be a place for him in the NBA. But I just don't think there is, you know, playing in the post. Got a guy that texts us here on the Texas Connect line that said if Jalen Williams can make it, I think Timmy can. I think that's not
Jalen Williams
comparison.
Can make threes, though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Jalen Williams is a little more athletic on the perimeter. Yeah. I think defensively, Jalen Williams leads the NBA and charges taken. I don't see I don't see Drew Timmy being able to do that.
Well, and you're pointing out the fact that you're pointing out the fact that he's not that great of a shooter, and that's the problem. Is you eliminate some of those question marks when you can shoot the ball from all over the floor, and that's a problem that Timmy's got. He specializes game at the collegiate level that I think you're right. He's sort of caught in between. I don't know that that moves up in the way that another player might, like a Jalen Williams.
Now, he's got a good assortment of shots around the basket, but, again, it's around the basket. Okay, let's get to the other game real quick. Florida Atlantic, they make their first Elite Eight and only their second NCAA tournament ever. And I tell you what, you talk about fearless. I was impressed with what they did, especially in the second half. After Tennessee did lock them down in the first half, locked them down for about the first 10 minutes of the second half, but they came alive. They didn't hit many threes, but they hit them in rapid-fire fashion about midway through the second half, and they move on against Tennessee. What'd you think, Mark?
That was a surprise. I mean, it wasn't necessarily as much as a surprise after I saw it, but one of my good friends has told me this, and I used this with Brad earlier today on the Cat, is basketball, coach said, season ends as the season goes. And the Tennessee season ended as the season went. They shot 32% from the three-point line. They don't have very good guards. They lost Zakai Ziegler as their best point guard. And so as much of the brawn and toughness and kind of physical players that they have inside, it wasn't enough to beat a Florida Atlantic team that has got some good guys. Like, they're good across the board, you know? I mean, they're all pretty athletic. They rebounded, and I thought it looked like they were kind of scared in the first half. In the second half, it looked like they were anything but that they came out and felt like, hey, we're the better team, and they took it to Tennessee, and it was kind of like Tennessee's a big bully and hit them hard early, and then they knocked the bully out in the second half. That was an impressive win.
Yeah, Brad, that's what the coach said after the game. Dusty Mays said, we had to get downhill, and they got downhill on some dribble drives in the second half, and that opened up guys on the outside. That's where a lot of their threes came from, and, you know, shot fake, drive, and so forth. He goes, we just needed to create more space because they're bigger and stronger at every position than our guys. And he said, and then when we did free our guys up, they knocked down some shots in the second half.
Yeah, I didn't give them much of a chance in that game last night. And this is one of the things that's bothered me about the four-team playoff field in college football, because there are teams that you wonder if given the opportunity. I don't think it translates equally that basketball and football, the way the two sports play out, don't necessarily translate, because Alabama can beat a lot of teams that are from some of the smaller conferences, and we saw that this year. But Florida Atlantic, I thought, yeah, they've won 33 games, but look at who they've beaten. And you look at their record, and they beat a lot of teams, but none of them were teams that would be scary to most people. And yet they come out and play the way that they did, or they have in this tournament. They don't seem to be too scared. They seem to be able to right the ship. And that's what makes this particular tournament, the basketball tournament, so great, is because they get that opportunity, and if they can beat a team, they move forward. But at Florida Atlantic, I think Kansas State ought to be able to beat them, but I thought they probably would lose last night. I was wrong about that, so who knows what I think.
Well, and that's what some of their guys, you know, Nick Boyd and Elijah Martin said after the game. He goes, Boyd said, I don't feel like we're Cinderella. He goes, we just played good basketball, played as a unit, played together, played physical. I know we're undersized, we're small, but we play hard and we play with heart. And Martin said, we feel like we're supposed to be here. And that's the key. When you get to that point, you know, you better feel like you're supposed to be there. So, like I said, I expect him to give K-State a heck of a game.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
We were just bragging on the Thunder yesterday, and they're in the 7th spot, and I've heard of 7 and 11 and craps or whatever, and Thunder found it wasn't very far from 7 to 11 in the Western Conference, because now, this morning, they wake up in the number 11 spot in a crazy situation where you have, what, four teams, 8, 9, 10, 11, all with the exact same 36-37 record. Minnesota's at 37-37, a half game ahead of all of them, in the number 7 spot today. But in the time, Marcus, it took Lou Dort to go 1-for-11, the Thunder fall from 7-11.
Yeah, I mean, I thought yesterday that this was going to shape up for a Kawhi Leonard type of game. This was the basketball gods putting Lou Dort back in his place. We talked about the great praise for Lou Dort shutting down Kawhi Leonard and embarrassing last night, and the basketball gods are not going to stand for Kawhi Leonard to be embarrassed by anybody, much less Lou Dort. So Leonard goes 13 of 15, scores 32 points with 6 rebounds and 6 assists. Dort goes 1 for 11 from the field, and the Thunder get their ass kicked last night. So tonight is a really important game for them to bounce back. Hopefully, we all think that Shea's going to play tonight after sitting out a lot of back-to-backs here in the last month. But this is the important one. And some teams around the Thunder have had some easy schedule opportunities, and there'll be some more things kind of work itself out this week. The Thunder really need to have the 76ers play well on the road. They've got a back-to-back at Golden State and Phoenix. So there's a lot of games around there. You know, Pels are against the Clips on Saturday. Probably Oklahoma City needs to root for the Clippers, you know, to win those games against New Orleans or really whoever they're playing right now. But the Clippers, as much as we kind of predicted doom and gloom for them, and maybe it might be tough for them without Paul George, but they're even with Phoenix right now. And Phoenix could be the team that drops without Kevin Durant coming back.
They well, I mentioned yesterday that teams 4 through 12, so 8 teams, are all within 3 games of each other. And what happened last night is how quickly those things can get shuffled around. So Oklahoma City winds up tumbling. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I felt like I was flipping back and forth during commercials over to this game during the Gonzaga-UCLA game. And then I switched over after that game was over with and decided it was time for me to go to bed when I saw what the score was. But I thought they left. I think SGA got more minutes than I thought he should have gotten in that game. I thought they should have rested him and planned on him being able to play tonight.
Yeah, it was finally garbage time in the fourth quarter, but he did play almost 27 minutes now. He was very effective with the 30 points in those 27 minutes, and Leonard talked about SGA after the game and said, you know, he was still very efficient. In other words, when the game got away from the Thunder, he didn't just start trying to force up shots like guys do a lot of times. But back to Mark's point on, like, the Pelicans are right there tied in that group. They had a big win at home last night against Charlotte where Ingram goes for a triple-double with 30, 11, and 10. So that's a team that's kind of been out of sight, out of mind without Zion. And we keep hearing he could come back within a couple of weeks. I mean, I don't know if it's going to help them regular season-wise, but if they could qualify for the playoffs. You know, elsewhere, like the Knicks go down to the Magic last night. Cleveland continues. I mean, Cleveland wins again. They're up to 47 wins now as they won a two-point game in Brooklyn last night, so a few interesting games. But for the Thunder guys, last night they just didn't have any answer for the Clippers bench. Really, the Clippers bench was they made 18 threes, and 11 of them came off the bench. And Marcus, we finally saw Bones Highland with 16 and 7 off the bench.
He did. He hit some shots. So overall, a pretty good night for the Clippers, and maybe just a little bit of the Thunder taking, relaxing after a big win on Tuesday night. Like, again, tonight's the important one. The Lakers are better than they were, I think, when the Thunder faced them the first time. After the deadline, they made some good moves, and they've got a little more across-the-board balance. Now, they're not better without LeBron, and he's not going to play tonight, but this is a big one. I kind of almost feel like this is going to determine whether Oklahoma City is potentially, you know, gets to the 7-8 spot, or a loss here might even, you know, be the game that decides whether or not they're going to go to the playoffs or not.
Did we ever think that we would say it's the key is the Thunder shutting down Austin Reeves to try to get into the playoffs? I mean, did you ever think you'd hear that one, Brad? I mean,
I certainly did not. But he's stepped into those hillbilly Kobe shoes, and he's filling them up right now. But, yeah, the Thunder are definitely going to have to D him up and cover him. But I was telling Mark earlier that the Thunder beat the Lakers with LeBron on the night that LeBron was going for the scoring record. He got the record, but they still came out with the win on the road in L.A. So this team, the Thunder can beat this team. It's going to be a question of how, you know, what kind of attitude Anthony Davis shows up with, assuming he's going to play. And how did the Thunder respond to that embarrassing loss last night? But, yeah, I think that this is a crucial game because they go on and play Portland before they come back home, and then they've got a stretch of games. And even the Portland game should be winnable. This is the one that's sort of a coin flip. So you got to hope that they can get away with getting this win in L.A.
Well, the good news is the basketball gods do not have a problem with Lou Dort shutting down Austin Reeves. I can promise you that. So that they're going to stay out of that one. They don't have to intervene, okay? I mean, they had to correct the wrong of Tuesday night. They do not have to correct anything. And it may go the other way. You know what I'm saying? They may have to correct the Austin Reeves 35-5-5 game too. So,
well, I heard Pinto talking this morning with the Morning Animals, which we gave it up to Matt for getting up so early out in L.A., but he was just saying this Laker team, it's amazing how different they are, the team that the Thunder beat the night that LeBron set the record and so forth, that they have a lot more firepower on the offensive end, maybe not quite as good on the defensive end. He was comparing them to the Clippers, and he was just saying, hey, the Lakers, as good as they've been playing, they're nowhere near as good as the Clippers on the defensive end. Which I agree with that. I think you would agree with that, right, Marcus? This Laker
yes.
team.
Yes.
So, but they have been hitting on all cylinders, even without LeBron on the offensive end. And Reeves has been playing well. Anthony Davis playing well. The D'Angelo Russell. I mean, they do have some weapons on the offensive end. So it'll be interesting. Hey, before we let you go, real quick, Brad, got to get a quick thought on what's the NCAA doing? You know, going after Ferris State for smoking a few cigars? Are you kidding me, Brad?
What,
I mean, Red Auerbach used to light up on the sideline. Come on.
The weirdest thing to me about that, and Switzer, too. Remember Switzer hiding the cup and the cigarette on the sideline?
Oh, yeah, sure.
The weirdest thing to me about that is that the punishment was handed out, and yet it's not going to be enforced until the next time they make the playoffs. So I guess if they don't make the playoffs for 3 years, in the fourth year they make the playoffs and the coach is going to be suspended for a game.
With all the things the NCAA needs to worry about, smoking cigars is not one of them.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.